Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barbara Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazines, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. As Beth told you, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly blog radio show. As usual, Beth, our marketing coordinator, who does our commercials, is on, and we have Steve Cromer, the technical and customer service, and Janice Cromer, myself, who's the director. For the non-members listening out there, and I hope there aren't too many of you, although I'd love you all to listen, but you need to become a member, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, and of course that encompasses the Atlantic and Gulf intracoastals, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and of course our very proud inland rivers. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, or AGLCA, is an organization of people who share a sense of adventure and a curiosity about the Great Loop. Our association's primary purpose is to share information and enhance the overall experience for you. Our website is www.greatloop.org. Please visit. We've released a redesigned website about a month ago, and I think you'll like it. We'd love for you to use all of the features that are free for everyone. And, of course, then please become a member. Our guest host this week is George McNair. George is the designer and builder of the MOG solar-powered electric boat. George will tell us about the history, specifications, and other facts that pertain to this innovative cruising vessel. If you'd like to ask George a question anytime during our broadcast, we have a toll-free number that you can call into. Please, please make use of it. Call toll-free to 877-497-1815. George, welcome, and thank you for being on our show this week.
Janice, thank you very much, and I'm very happy to have the folks out there listening in to what we're going to describe here as a solar-powered yacht, actually a 40-foot boat powered by solar electricity on which one can live and go any place they want to go on the water.
Well, I have several questions. I'd like to start with, because I know very, very, very little about the MOG and solar power and batteries, but what amount of power do you need and what comes from the sun?
All of our power comes from the sun, except for an auxiliary engine that we have on the back of the boat. Everything comes from the sun. That would power the refrigerator, the air conditioning, and the twin electric drive motors that drive the boat forward, reverse, port, starboard. It all comes from the sun.
That is amazing. How far can you go on a full charge?
Full charge, you could go, what we set as a criteria, for 5 days at 8 hours a day or 8 days at 5 hours a day. It's really dependent on how many batteries one has on board, how you charge the batteries, and how many solar cells there are on top of the boat that capture the sun's electricity and pass it into the batteries. But our target is 8.5 or 5.8.
So basically 40 hours of cruising.
Exactly. And that would be without any sunlight. So if the days were dark, you would have the storage capacity to do so. If we get into a little bit of the electrics of the ideas, you would be looking at somewhere between 20 and 30,000 watts of stored energy. This would be about twice of what they put in a Tesla motor car to have it go for about 100 miles. We store that amount of energy in batteries. They're down in the center of the hold of the boat and positioned right in the middle so that it helps stabilize the boat also.
Okay.
So that,
you said that's without any sun.
That's without any sun. If you have sunlight, then what occurs is as you're going forward, you're bringing in electricity. If the batteries are full, that electricity goes straight to the powering of the motors and not into the batteries. So it's all in how you control the electricity coming down from the solar array. There are many different things that can either hinder the operation or aid the operation. And one of those things is clouds. And just like anyone who sails a sailboat with the sails up, you want to look out for what the weather is, what the wind direction is, what the water direction is with the tides, and boat accordingly.
Okay, now I'm just curious. Most of our looper trawlers go 7-8 knots. You know, that's about the most we can do. How fast can the MOG go, and what is its basic cruising speed?
The MOG has a full displacement, what we call hard-chined hull, and that displacement hull is pegged at about 7 knots maximum.
That's about the same as our trawlers.
That's right. Now, that would be running wide open, which would deplete your batteries fairly quickly within an hour or 2 hours.
However, if
you're running at about 3 knots, 3.5 miles an hour, such as that, you can make those batteries last virtually all day long. In fact, I had made one of my longest daytime trips from Oriental down to Edenton on the Alligator Pungo Canal, and that was 40 miles. I left at 100% charge, and at the end of a sunny day, I had a 96% charge. So that was 40 miles.
That's because a lot of the energy went directly to the engines?
Right to the electric motors, and always kept the batteries topped out.
Uh-huh. Great.
So that
if you're facing a storm or some emergency, is there a way to make the boat go faster?
Oh, definitely. That's why one would have an auxiliary on board.
Uh-huh.
And simply deploy that, put it down, and start it up and go. However, the objective of this particular boat is not to use that auxiliary at all. And at this point, let me wander off to the side a little bit.
Sure.
People with boats, and I've been in the boating community since the 1950s, stick mainly to the center channel, then go to an anchorage where there's enough draft to anchor the boat, and then get in a kayak or their rubber inflatable boat and power off to the shore. Or they might even get on a paddleboard.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the MOG has a 1-foot, 6-inch draft.
Fantastic. Wow.
Now, your kayak is now something on which you live aboard. It has a commode, has a full working galley, has a head, has a full standing shower, a bed that pulls down in the back, which is a full queen size. It doesn't come to a point. And in our case, 2 full reclining leather chairs up front, imported from, I think, Norway or Denmark.
I wanted to ask about the facilities. That is, it's basically a liveaboard if you needed to.
Oh, this is totally liveaboard. It is meant to liveaboard full time. However, it doesn't need to carry a dinghy or a rib. or a kayak.
Not
it
with
actually
a 1.5 foot
goes
draft.
There. It
yeah.
actually goes there. And there are a few things that enable this to occur. One is the forefoot of the boat has UHMW. If you have a cutting board at home, you know that that's a piece of plastic that's about a half an inch thick, and you can run your knife over it or cleaver, and it barely makes a dent in it, just makes a scrape in it. That's called UHMW, and that lines the front of the forefoot about 10 feet back from the bow. And then instead of having a single skeg or keel under the boat, there are two small keels, which we call skegs, one toward the port side and one toward the starboard side. When the boat goes aground, which is often because that's what we like to do, it sits there and never heels over. Now the whole world of the boater has been opened up from being in the center channel, where you can go any time of day, up small canals, up little estuarial creeks, and allow the boat to ground, just making sure that you go in on the low high and not the high high. And you want to keep your eye on the weather, too, to make sure the water's not blown out the next day. But the idea is the boat sits aground. In Europe, they do it all the time. Over here in America, it's a rarity. And
yeah,
we've brought that rarity to light.
And this is all on a 40-foot boat.
And you're on a 40-foot boat.
Unbelievable. Amazing. Wow. That is great. I'm just thinking of what it would look like towing down the Intracoastal and looking off to the side estuaries or something and seeing a 40-foot boat aground. That's fantastic. Let's get back to the technicalities, though, for me. How many batteries and what type do you use?
Currently, I'm using just 10 batteries because it calculates out for me as an easy percentage to test the boat. If I want to, I can put 28 batteries into the boat, 12-volt variety. We have a new battery coming up that's coming out of Palm Beach, Florida. And that battery is an 8-volt battery, has, for all the technophobes out there, it's an 8-volt battery, has 373 amps, about 2,900 watts. We use, 8 or 10 of those batteries, and they would replace all of the 28 normal 12-volt batteries.
How much real estate does that take up, George?
The 10 batteries right now take up about 30 inches by 36 inches. So taking it up to 20 batteries would be 3 feet by 6 feet in the center of the hull.
Oh, that's not good at all. Yeah, amazing. Now, is there a provision for an electric generator?
In fact, we had a wonderful Onan electric generator up in the bow of the boat when I first launched it, and that was a 1,800 RPM, very slow RPM gasoline, 4,000-watt unit. We never used it, and I ended up selling it to a police officer who put it in his Carver in New York City. Never even
That's
started it.
That's a cute story. Now, the canal boat, it looks different from our regular trawlers. Does it look like a European canal boat?
Actually, no and yes. The only way someone is really going to be able to see it is for them to go online at www.mogcanalboat.com.
You've got some photos there.
Exactly. And the hull is patterned after the 1800s Garvey-type hull that was used in Norfolk for lightering ships. A ship would come in. It couldn't make it to the docks because it was too heavily laden, and the draft was too great. So they'd have these lightering boats that would go out. And the boats didn't have much of a bow. It was a kind of like a board across the front and a board across the back, so it looked like it had two transoms. But they were very beamy, and they were flat athwartships with a little bit of rocker fore and aft, a displacement hull, hard chine. And they would take tremendous loads off of those big boats and take them to shore until the big boat could have enough draft to be able to get in there up to the dock and unload. So that Garvey hull was made into a 30-foot. And then a number of years ago, we kept the same superstructure, and we added 7 feet to the bow for a cutting bow and 3 feet to the stern for a larger aft cockpit. So the 30-foot became a 40.
Now, is that why you use a displacement hull? Was that part of your decision?
I didn't get that last portion.
I'm sorry, the displacement hull.
What was the
decision behind using a displacement hull?
The reason for that was that the boat was not intended to go fast, and we needed to make sure that we were very efficient in the use of electrical energy.
Uh-huh.
And the best type of hull for that is a
full displacement
hull. Right.
Okay, great. I think, Steve, if you're ready, we're going to break for a quick commercial from our sponsor, Homeport Marina.
Homeport Marina is the Alabama Gulf Coast's premier facility, located in beautiful Gulf Shores, Alabama. Amenities include concrete floating docks, 30, 50, and 100-amp electrical services, Valtech gasoline and diesel, phone, cable, wireless internet is available, pump-out facilities, and 24-hour restrooms, showers, and laundry. Homeport Marina is a proud commander sponsor of the AGLCA. For more information, visit www.homeportmarina.net.
Thank you, Steve and Beth. Okay, George, one of my questions, and I just so often we're on No Sense, which is our trawler, and we get ready to leave, and Steve turns the key for the engines, and they grind and grind and grind, and I just keep hoping, oh, please start. How easy is the solar-powered yacht to start?
Well, Steve had it right. You stick the key in, you turn it, and the electric motors turn.
They just go on.
And just go on. In fact, on this boat, there's not even a key. The only key is for the auxiliary engine. There are a few switches that you turn on to make sure that the electricity's there. A couple little lights blink at you, and you're off. And one of the most disconcerting things, and I'm working on this also, is that the motors are so silent, you can't tell whether they're in forward or reverse. And so I'm hooking up a little bit of what we call an oscillator or a speaker, and I flick a switch, and it can either sound like a diesel engine or a gasoline engine or my favorite airplane.
You know, I'm going to diverge a little bit from our list of questions. What got you started on this? What was your background?
I went to school and sat in class and sketched boats and cruisers and battleships and airplanes, and went to college for industrial design, got out of college, went into the military, came out of the military, got into computers, got with a couple of really great companies, and was able to retire early and dedicate my technological inclinations to the boating that I got started on when I was 8 or 10 years old.
You're
with my dad.
Fantastic. And you were able basically to marry the engineering and the computer skills with your boating, which is so many of us would really, really be able to say when they finished their careers it was worthwhile and they really enjoyed it. That's great. Just a couple questions about the looks of the boat. Do you need different hardware or navigation lights? Are you able to get parts or what you need to fulfill the requirements of yachting?
The boat is based on being able to go to West Marine and Walmart. That's it. In essence, the platform of the boat, the sole, the floor upon which you stand is at the same height as the ground in the estuary. So if you're going up some little estuarial stream, it is as if you are standing right there in the grass. And the height of the boat from the water, or its air draft, is 8 feet 2 inches. So you can crawl underneath just about any bridge.
Yeah.
And
that's a fantastic benefit.
And the side rails of the boat are made of PVC with spacers every foot in between, so that if you do step overboard, you can actually grab onto the boat because there is a hollow place between the rail and the side of the boat.
Uh-huh.
And as an aside here, I had been going into Beaufort, got out of the channel, and ran the boat aground. And it is very difficult for me to get used to the fact that the boat only has a 1 foot, 6 inch draft.
Uh-huh.
I got off of the boat, stepped into the water. It's only knee deep. I pushed the boat, put the engines in reverse, hopped back on the boat, and it pulled itself off. So there, you can go virtually anywhere, with the boat. And the electric motors give you the capability to navigate this boat so precisely. There's no waiting for the electric motor to go into forward or reverse through a transmission. It just goes from forward immediately to reverse. And there's really no lag time going from zero RPM to full RPM when you push the throttle forward, because it's an electric motor, and electric motors inherently have what we call full torque at stall, which means they have a tremendous amount of power when they're turning 0 to 100 RPM, and they still maintain that power virtually all the way up through their RPM range.
Now, what about periodic maintenance? Is there a lot of maintenance required?
The major maintenance...
It doesn't sound like it would be.
I like to relate it to a refrigerator. Every once in a while you have to defrost to get the water out, and in the case of the electric boat, every once in a while you don't get the water out, you get the water into the batteries.
Uh-huh.
And depending on the types of batteries that you use, if they're wet cell batteries, then you lift the tops off maybe once a week or once every 2 or 3 weeks, depending on the type, and top them off. So that would be the major portion. The other thing is that the boat has absolutely no through hulls below the waterline. There are no prop shafts coming out. Currently, it's powered by outboard motors because they're easy for me with which to work with the new electric motors. But there are no through hulls below, so there's no problems with sucking up mud or anything into any of the intakes.
Clogging the engines. Where do you go for service if you need something?
Where do we go where?
For service, if you do need service.
The wonderful thing about this is everything is modular.
Ah.
So if there's something that doesn't work, a call would indicate whether it is the controller for the electric motors, the controller for the photovoltaic modules, or the controllers for some other portion of the system, and a new controller would be sent out, and you would send the old controller back. So, I've made it so it's what we call switching blades. You pull something out and you slide something else in.
Kind of like a Lego set there.
exactly.
Okay, now what do you do about water and sewage? I know sewage is always a big concern on boats, and where do you store your water?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think one of the little posts that I put on the forum was I had called two of the major composting commode manufacturers.
I saw that this week. Yes.
And have asked them to step up and give me a sheet of paper that says this is okay in Canada and this is okay in the United States. Now, one of them, Sunmar, has one-page sheet that encapsulates the certifications from the Coast Guard. I want the same thing for Canada. And I want the same thing from Envirolet and a number of other companies. And that should be on everyone's boat so that as they cross the border, they can feel good about it.
Yes, I know that is a huge concern. There's
right.
been a lot of chatter about it on the discussion forum this week.
And for people who don't know, a composting commode takes the human waste and rotates it into in a drum along with something like sphagnum moss and some biomaterials, and with the amount of water that's in there, the waste gets tumbled and decays into inert, call it fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
And that process is very natural, and it makes for not having big messes and big smelly pump outs when you go to the marina. So you can completely avoid that. There are things that need to be done to make the composting commodes better so that it supports 2 to 3 people full-time rather than 1 to 2 people sparingly.
Uh-huh.
But those will be addressed, and I've been at this for 25 years, so there are lots of little twists and turns.
Well, that kind of brings me to what kind of upgrades are made to the yacht in the future? Obviously, a more sophisticated composting. Anything else in the works?
Most people that would be considering a composting commode for their boat would be best to take that into consideration either upon the initial design or the initial purchase of a previously owned boat.
Uh-huh.
And that would require cutting out a portion of the floor so that a storage unit for the composting would be below the floor. And,
now, what do you do in the case of the Mog, where there is nothing below the floor? I mean, you're only a 1.5
Right.
Inch
we only have a. There's only 16 inches between the sole and the actual bottom of the boat.
Yeah.
We use a composting commode that actually sits on the floor.
Okay.
It's called the Mobile by Sunmar, and it's used in RVs and other types of recreational vehicles, and so also made for use in boats.
Okay. I think we kind of covered the interiors. It sounds like it's a great liveaboard boat. We're just about out of time, but I do have to ask, has somebody done this before, or if they haven't, why haven't they? And what motivated you to do this?
Oh, boy, that's loaded. Yes, a number of people have done this before, and most of those have been what we call a hybrid, where they have an engine running for at least half of the time that they're motoring from one place to another.
Uh-huh.
This is full solar total, and one of those things where I'd rather shoot myself than start the auxiliary.
One of those seven male captains there.
Yes, and a number of these have been done over the past 20 years, 25 years I've been working on this project, and all of them at first were taken almost as a threat because I'm very competitive, and then I've seen over the years that they just fall by the wayside, and out of the original 5 or 6 boats that were built in the United States that were completely solar-powered, this is the only one that's still running and still working and still being improved.
Absolutely fantastic. You must be very, very proud of it and your accomplishments. George, this has been fascinating for me. I thought it would be kind of a dry subject, and I'm loving it, so I hope all of our listeners out there enjoyed it. Please keep posting to our discussion forum so that our members can know how you're doing. Your postings are great and really enjoyable, and I just thank you very, very much. Is there anything in closing that you'd like to say?
Sure. Sometimes I look at this as Mog being not only moving on gently, which is part of his description, but mariners over ground. And the water gets pretty skinny and with the Mog, and many times we've had the Coast Guard come up, as well as other onlookers, offering to drag us off the sandbar. So it's very entertaining from that standpoint, and it's a great way to see everything, both the center channel and the shores.
George, give us your website one more time.
It is mogcanalboat.com, mogcanalboat.com. It's an old site right now. We're getting a new one. I'm jealous that you've gotten yours before I've gotten my new site. But the new one's coming up. It should be up in about 2 weeks.
And is there a way, if people have questions, to ask questions from that website or the new one?
They can do that. Probably the easiest way is through AGLA. And the boat is at a wonderful marina, which is Bennett Brothers Yachts in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yes.
And It's there. Just give a call to Bennett Brothers every once in a while and ask them if it's still there, if we haven't departed, and we'll go from there.
Well, George, thank you so much. This has been a very great show. I really enjoyed it. Everyone, again, please visit www.greatloop.org. Become a member, and you'll be able to participate in the discussion forum and follow George's adventures. That's it for now. George, again, thank you. And until next week, everyone, safe cruising.
Thank you, Janice. Thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks, George.